This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. All right, college football. Of course, Chip Kelly gets a five-year deal to go to UCLA. Mike Riley is out at Nebraska. He was fired today by Bill Moose. Let's give you some college scores. And, of course, remember yesterday Miami lost to Pitt in a horribly played game by Miami, a great game played by Pitt. Oklahoma State leads Kansas 17-3. That's in the second quarter. SMU is leading Tulane 14-7. It's Michigan 14, Ohio State nothing. A big upset going there because you got the Michigan team is, believe it or not ranked, and Ohio State is ranked number 9. Memphis is leading East Carolina 35-0. Indiana and Purdue are tied at 7. Florida State leads Florida 14-7. Connecticut over Cincinnati 6-0. Georgia ranks 7th in the country, leading Georgia Tech 7-0. Louisville leads Kentucky 17-7. It's Boston College 14, Syracuse 7. Wake Forest leads Duke 10-0, and that's in the first quarter. So those are the scores in college football. In the National Football League, Ray Armstrong, a linebacker, veteran, who just did a contract extension a year ago, cut by the San Francisco 49ers to make room for Tank Carradine, who's coming off the injured list today. Seahawks, of course, getting Luke Joeckel back, presumably to start at left guard, and that means they have to make a move to put either Ethan Posick at right guard or Mark Glowinski. Mike Davis, of course, is listed as doubtful, so he's not expected to play. 49ers, of course, reasonably healthy. They have Colbert, the safety, is going to miss the game, so they're really down to their fourth safety. That could open some things up in the middle of the field. As far as other big injuries in the National Football League, Calvin Benjamin did not make the trip from Buffalo to Kansas City. He's going to be out with a knee injury, and those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby, and Dave, what a great day it is. It's Apple Cup, it's college football, all good things.
It's the Iron Bowl. It's the game between Ohio State and Michigan. It's all good things is right, Johnny boy.
Yep, it's really good. And, of course, I guess it got started yesterday with Miami being upset by Pitt, possibly knocking Miami out of a national championship.
Not possibly, John. They're out.
Yeah, I
take it back. They might have an off chance, although I doubt it, if they win the ACC championship game against Clemson. They probably don't have it, so... You know, Notre Dame is playing Stanford today. That's another big one as well. We'll see what it looks like for the college championship. But I lament the fact that not all the big games are on the same day. But actually, it times out pretty good today if you're a college football fan. You can watch Ohio State, Michigan right now, Alabama, Auburn at noon, and then at 5:00 comes the Apple Cup.
Mm-hmm. Which is going to be pretty good. What's your thoughts?
I'm doing anyway today, John. Usually, that's what I'm doing at the end of the show. That's what I'm doing today.
Oh, now, are you going to the game or?
No. It's too much to watch. I'm just going to watch it on TV. I was over there yesterday for a basketball game, though.
Yeah, I know. Pretty good one, too.
Seattle U and Washington played a really good game, won by the Huskies 89-84 at a decent crowd. It was an interesting day yesterday, and, you know, we don't talk much about it, but college basketball season is shaping out to be pretty interesting as well, just because you're not sure about the top teams, the investigations going on, but there's a couple of surprises already here out west. The Cougars are 5-0. They knocked off number 21 St. Mary's last night. And I watched, just when I got back from the Seattle UW game, I happened to watch Arizona State play Xavier. You know Xavier, John, always a good program.
Yeah.
They're ranked 15th in the nation. They had a 15-point lead, and Arizona State winds up winning the game by 20.
Wow.
And Trey Kaplan, I believe is the player's name I want you to remember, had 40 points. It was absolutely spectacular. They're 6-0. So there's some interesting interlopers in the world of college basketball, but it's a big weekend, certainly, for college sports, no question about it.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's going to be so good about this. I mean, what kind of game do you expect? I mean, isn't it amazing to think that here's the Apple Cup? This is college football, and Washington State are the two best defensive teams in the Pac-12.
Yes, it is, John. It's quite surprising to think that. On paper, it's a game that favors the Huskies, and that's why the line is what it is at about 9.5 points. Part of it is the fact that they have never – you know what? We'll probably have an idea right out of the chute in this game. If I remember right, last year it was like 28-0 or 28-3 at the end of the first quarter, and and the Huskies won it like 45-17. It was a no-contest game, and that's kind of what they've been like since the Leach-Peterson era has begun. So from a Washington State standpoint, they're going to be looking for the quick start. But, you know, Washington's got a tremendous defensive line, which you know, remember the Cougars, that hadn't impacted them in a while. But when they had that terrible game against Cal, Luke Falk got sacked 9 times. Cal's defensive line just destroyed him. And Washington has a defensive line with those kind of capabilities, even though Washington State's offensive line has played better. You know, the Cougars kind of have the edge at quarterback, you'd say, except Luke Falk hadn't had a decent game against the Huskies. So there's a tremendous amount for the Cougars to prove. And, of course, the spot in the Pac-12 championship on the line. For Washington, again, you know, we talk about it being a different circumstance for Washington player or Washington team over the years to be in a circumstance where they can wreck the Cougars' plans. But for the Washington players, the guys who are actually on the football field, this is a first-time occurrence. You know, this is a team that has gone from mediocre to the summit last year and now at a point where they can spoil it for their rival. It'll be interesting to see how much that means for Washington. It means a ton for fans, obviously, but I'll be curious to see how much it means for the players who, you know, have dominated in this series and may look at this game a little bit differently as a game where they feel like they've got the Cougars on the matchups. We'll see. A couple of individuals have got to step forward for Washington State, and they got to change the trend big time to win this game. A lot of people think they can do it, though, and I think they've got a great chance in the game.
Yeah, no chance, no doubt about it. So, right now, if you would make a prediction, who do you think wins?
But going back and forth on it, I'd say right now, if I was to make a prediction, and you know, there's other karma working. You know, the other factor is this is the final game Bob Rondo is calling for the Huskies at Husky Stadium as he's winding up his tremendous career, and really, I don't know why he's doing that. He's still at the very top of his game, but you know that strikes me as an X factor for the Huskies. I think that Washington as a team is ultimately a little disappointed to be in the spoiler role, and Washington State is gonna really, you know, be motivated to be in the role that they're in. But you know, I keep thinking about those games the last couple of years and how they just haven't even been competitive. And you know, I defer to Las Vegas like everyone else does, and they've been very definitive on this. 9.5, 10 points, Huskies favored. Washington at home, going to be very tough to beat. I think as we're speaking right now, John, I'm leaning towards Washington.
Yeah, see, I am too. I just think home field means so much, and I think that we've seen this now from, you know, both Washington and Washington State. It's not easy to win on the road against good teams, and sometimes even teams that aren't as good as you are. And so the fact that they are on the road, the fact that this is a proud Husky team, they want to prove something. It's a rivalry, and they've got a lot of good players. Now, again, I think one of the downturns the last couple of weeks on defense is that the injuries started catching up to them.
Yeah, that's a part of it, too, and on offense, too. I mean, I keep harping on the fact that I believe Washington lost maybe their best football player in Adams, the left tackle. And mm-hmm. you know, they've struggled. They struggled on offense last week, even running the ball against Utah, and really needed kind of a miracle to win that game. Week before, obviously not very good. So their offense is not what it was either. And Washington State's got a couple of elite defensive linemen as well. You know, I guess, John, what I'm thinking about this game is all the conventional wisdom seems to be telling us that it's going to be a high-scoring game. When you look at these two offenses, you look at these two quarterbacks, look at some of the skill position players. But you look at the other side of the ball, just like you said, here you got Washington and Washington State. Both defenses are among the best in the Pac-12. And have been at different times this year have been amongst the best in the country. I kind of think, even though everyone thinks it's going to be an offensive game, that this may be a low-scoring game. This may be a game where the defense is dominated, which is just exactly the kind of twist you'd expect from an Apple Cup game. It's just great to have a rivalry game. I mean, I'm watching Ohio State, Michigan, and obviously I'm a big Ohio State fan. And all the numbers in this game favored Ohio State in a big way. Michigan that doesn't have an offense that's working and functioning. They've lost 3 games. And you know, here's Michigan at home up by 2 touchdowns in the first half. Now, you just never know in a rivalry game. And the same thing for that great Alabama-Auburn game. You know, the numbers in that game tell you that Auburn's going to win it, not Alabama. In the times in the past, and again, it's risky when you talk about the past in college football because it's got nothing to do with the present. But in the past, when Auburn's been a 9-win team in this game, they're like 6-1. They usually win this game when the teams are close, and they're ranked 6th in the country now, so if they win it, that'll scramble the top of the SEC, the top of the college football playoff poll as well. Because remember, Alabama's still got another game to play against Georgia, who can have their season wrecked by Georgia Tech today. So it really is coming down to the wire in college football.
Thoughts on Chip Kelly getting the job at UCLA?
Surprised he took it. Very surprised he took it. I would have expected that he would have gone to Florida if that was, in fact, the choice that he had, and I don't know that it was. It's a coup for UCLA, but, you know, Jim Mora began to start changing their culture in terms of being successful. I mean, UCLA has got an entitled sort of program where they just feel like they kind of deserve success. And when you look at it on a football standpoint, they really have not had it since Terry Donahue was here. Now, Jim Mora was like 45-27, so you know, people want to denigrate his time there. And he did struggle in his last year, but he led them to winning seasons and 10-win seasons as well. But he's the only one to have done it since Donahue. It's a very tough place to win in football. They tend not to commit. It's you know, campus, does, you know, they have the football stadium is obviously off campus, and the Rose Bowl's got a lot of masters, not just UCLA football. I know during Jim Mora's tenure there, one of the things he insisted on and kind of stamped his feet on was getting a football facility, getting an upgraded locker room facility, which he did. You know, Chip Kelly brings a huge reputation in and had that great success at Oregon. But remember, he walked into a situation that was tailor-made. They were already winning. He was already the offensive coordinator there. His offense has already been run there for 2 or 3 years before he took over. They were a 10-11-win team when he did take over. And he just kept it going. Maybe took it to the next level, and the next level was a microscopic move. It's a UCLA program that needs a total rebuild, and he's going to need to get his players in there. So we'll see how patient UCLA will be. And I do not expect him to have immediate success. I think that's an important point to make. You know, he had it at Oregon, but again, like I said, if you look back at the history of that hire and what the situation was with Oregon football, they were going in the right direction. They were doing extremely well. He had been the offensive coordinator for 3 years, so his offense had already been installed. It was just a question of getting top players to play it. He's got the reputation now. I don't know how much it was tarnished by his NFL experience. It probably was not helped by his NFL experience. He is recruiting to L.A., so we'll see. But UCLA has proven to be a very tough nut to crack, not a place where it's easy to win, so we'll see what he can do.
No, and that's going to be interesting. And, of course, looks like a lot of changes in coaching. I guess every year there's 23 to 25 head coaching changes. Brett
yeah,
Bielema.
But it seems like a lot of prominent ones this year.
Yeah, more,
I mean, I was just kind of looking
good,
around.
More
the
good
other
jobs
games.
Over so you, there, yeah.
I mean, you got Florida and Florida State are both 4-6 this year. I mean, these are teams that are used to winning. You have your normal movement, just like you talked about. You've got a lot of top programs who have really struggled this year. And Florida, I mean, to me, them at 4-6 is an unbelievable season, and to me, the most attractive of the jobs out there. I mean, they've won. It's easy. It's not easy to win, but you know, you're the State University of Florida. You can get recruits down there in that recruit-rich environment. You know, we talk about Texas as well as been a team that's disappointed this year. You got a bunch of teams elsewhere in the country that have done the same thing. So I agree with you. It's going to be a very interesting offseason in college football with some real prime jobs available.
No doubt. And lots of activity. And, of course, it's going to be interesting to see how the selections are going to go as far as the bowls, all those things. I guess briefly to talk about the 49ers game against the Seahawks. Seahawks mm-hmm. got a little bit of a break on Thanksgiving in the sense that both the Dallas Cowboys lost, the Detroit Lions lost. And so now, I mean, really, they're in pretty good shape for the wild card. They're still in good shape, I think, for the division. Where they're not in good shape is to get a number one or number two seed.
Well, John, I'm the pessimistic voice at the station. I don't agree with any of that. I think that they're going to struggle in this game with San Francisco. I think what they are is, in fact, a one-dimensional team with a great quarterback, and he gives you the puncher's chance every single week. There's no question about that. But you got an offense that can't run the football. Eventually, you know, defenses know that now. You're playing to stop the pass with the Seahawks, and you can beat the Seahawks. Your secondary is manned by guys who weren't even in the league in one case until last week. Manned by backups there. I think, you know, the defensive line is showing signs of cracking a little bit, although Deion Jordan's been a nice add. You know, how long can Michael Bennett keep it up? You kind of wonder a little bit. I think injuries have taken their toll there. The offensive line remains in flux. You know, getting Luke Jokel back is not a bad thing. It's certainly a good thing. But now you got him playing by different guys. I remain skeptical about the Seahawks' chances to even make the playoffs. I think when they go through that stretch coming up, Philadelphia, Jacksonville, they're going to struggle mightily in that circumstance. I mean, you were talking about taking away three of the best players on that defense and talking about how it doesn't make any difference. And I just think that it does. I think the team is built to be secondary first. is now got to protect their secondary, with the exception of Earl Thomas, obviously. So I don't see much trouble in this game because San Francisco is terrible, although I see it being a similar game to the first game they played, which was an ugly sort of affair, although it would not shock me if they stumbled in this game because they're a one-dimensional team on offense and a team that is battered and bruised on defense. I just don't see what other people see about them cruising into the playoffs, winning 10 or 11 games. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I still think, I mean, again, what I look at is the other teams, too, and this team still has talent and depth. I mean, to be able to lose six starters like they have and still be able to put out enough guys with experience, that says something.
Yeah, but that says something, but that's assuming that no one else gets hurt.
Yeah.
Which is unlikely in this NFL, as you well know. I mean, especially this time of the year, it's tough. I mean, look, the Seahawks have got a bunch of gamers on that team. So let me emphasize that point, number one. And they have, with Russell Wilson, the puncher's chance in every single game because you've got a quarterback who is capable of doing it all. He's being asked to do it all in every single game and is doing it for the most part. But, you know, they've lost two straight home games. I think people are not really seeing what they're doing. They have not been a particularly good football team the last couple of weeks. And I think it's going to be very tough for them with the injuries to play better than they have in the last couple of weeks. The last couple of weeks haven't been good enough.
No, that's true. Hey, so now tell me how you're going to handle this as far as all the watching of games and all this for the weekend.
Oh, I got it locked in, John. I got it locked in. The game is on right now, Ohio State and Michigan. That'll end around 12. Then comes Auburn and Alabama, which should be fantastic. That'll end at 4. That'll give me a chance to eat, to walk the dog, to talk to my wife, and then at 5 o'clock, the Apple Cup. It's a perfectly laid out day for college football.
Gotta love it. Enjoy.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, that's Dave Grosby. Of course, Bob Gros and Tom every weekday from 12 until 3. And, of course, you can catch him with Seattle U basketball. That season is really geared up. Great game last night against Washington. All right, give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
Dr. John, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Oh, I'm ready to come off the bye, and I'm fired up for another close but fateful loss against the Carolina Panthers this week.
I'll tell you what now, it's like, didn't you like the comment made by, which is funny because, you know, in what could be his last year as coach, you know, Todd Bowles saying, do you have to win out to get it? It's like, well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it, to make the playoffs? And, of course, obviously they're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I know. I got to give him credit for a lot of things. He's handled this whole season pretty well. You know, I mean, he's on a hot seat, but. You know, I'm really not so sure how hot that seat truly is, especially after winning four games already, which is well above anybody's expectation going into the season. I think as long as there's not a complete, you know, meltdown and they can improve on some of the fundamentals, like perhaps cutting down on penalties, for example, and some of the mental mistakes, I think he's coming back.
I would hope. I mean, I think he's a good coach.
Well, I'm still not entirely sold. The one thing I will say, I will give him credit for, though, also is I like that coaching staff that he's put together. I know Morton has got some fine-tuning to do, but and he's got some experience he needs to get, particularly amongst making adjustments at halftime and perhaps play calling. But I like what he's done in bringing in that offense and some of the spreads and sets he's done. And I really like having – I think one of the better moves was bringing in Kevin Green.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that he's helped. Well, as you've noted before, it's been pretty obvious, is the uptick in speed that they have on the defense in general compared to the past several years. But I also like the way that they're more aggressive and going towards the quarterback, and they're playing with a little more emotion than they did the last couple years. And I attribute a little bit of that, at least, to Kevin Green. I thought that was a really nice coaching move. And, you know, you're not seeing a whole lot of mistakes this year in the defensive backfield. Certainly not as many as I thought you were going to get with a couple of rookies back there and a couple of younger players at cornerback. But, man, you know, from a positional perspective and from a, you know, mental grasp of the system perspective, that defensive backfield looks a whole lot better than it did the last couple of years when it was loaded with nothing but veterans.
Yeah, because, I mean, what they've done is they've drafted to some speed and talent. I mean, I think that they're pretty good at safety, and now they're maybe two-thirds of the way there at linebacker.
But I think they've done a little bit better job coaching them up. Now, I know the front seven in particular, and, man, especially against, like, Oakland and the game after that, the front seven weren't they were not gelled, and they weren't, so to say, staying in their lanes. I mean, Lee was constantly out of position, and I also don't think that the linemen were playing the gap, were assuming the gap responsibilities correctly. But, boy, they really have tightened that up, and that front seven is playing much more cohesively now. And, you know, I think they're making – they're still under-talented, but they're still making some gains. And, you know, so I'm happy to see that. But the one question I really wanted to ask you about was seeing our old pal Darrell Revis back in the NFL. You know, I'm glad he's trying to resurrect his career and perhaps resurrect his legacy. But more importantly, as far as Jet fans are currently concerned, how does his contract with the Chiefs work amongst an offset for the $6 million?
It should be about $1 million offset, so it takes the $6 million down to $5 million.
Even if he does get all the bonuses, if Kansas City does advance in the playoffs, like I heard he is supposedly getting.
I think that'll come out of a different one because you get the offset on the base salary, not on the bonuses. So I don't think that they get the bonuses on that. That one I'm not sure of, but I would think not.
Okay, so generally, rule of thumb generally is that the offset is just off of the base salary.
Right. Now, again, if it's an escalator into the base salary, which you know, it could be, well, I would think it probably wouldn't be on it because the Chiefs are too tight against the cap, and you know, they would pay it off at the end of the season. So I don't think they get any benefit from that.
Yeah, I think that's probably why they did that because, like you said, they are tight against the cap.
Mm-hmm. This is a team that had to cut several players. You know, they had to cut Jeremy Maclin because of the cap.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think of his signing?
Interesting. I don't know what he has left. I mean, you know, I compare it to the Dwight Freeney signing, where I mean, you might get an instant impact. You may get, you know, you may have hit gold, but also I think as the four games started to go, I think Dwight started to slow down a little bit, and that could be the same case with Revis because you saw how slowed down he was last year. So what you might see in the first couple of weeks, you got to see if he can sustain it in the final three games or four games of the season.
Yeah, the difference, though, is, I mean, Freeney is going to come in on, you know, third down packages. You know, he's probably going to play, what, maybe 12, 14 downs a game.
No, he was up to 28, and then they took him down to 17 in the last game.
Yeah, that was part of the problem because of the injuries. Uh-huh. But, you know, with Revis, I can imagine that they'd like to have him out there for much more than that. But, hey, when you're his age and you just didn't have the wheels last couple years, I think some of that was a question of whether or not he was in shape. But be that as it may, I don't see him getting any faster sitting on the bench for the first 10 weeks of the season this year. So I don't know. Unless they're going to put him in some sort of packages or something, I have my doubts.
Yeah. No, I'm the same way. I think that it's a gamble. You can see that they've had three cornerbacks that they were rotating at different spots on the one side of Marcus Peters, and none of them did well. And so you take a shot and you see, hey, let's cost them, you know, it doesn't cost $1 million because it costs, what, 6/17 of a million. So, you know, you're talking like about $400,000 or something like that. So it's not too bad of a gamble.
Well, you know, it's a desperation move. But like you said, it's a gamble that they need to take. Mm-hmm. And it's not really breaking the bank, and they did have to release the players to make the move. But you know, I can see it. And lastly, how about our old pal the up to the Bills and that quarterback maneuver? Boy, didn't that turn out really well?
Oh yeah, I mean, but how predictable was that? We talked about it, and it's like it was when I heard it last week. I thought Nathan Peterman, you were going to put him in there when you're giving up 30 points a game. I mean, a rookie quarterback to get 14 to 17 points, he has no chance. And so it worked out as bad as you can imagine.
Yeah, I couldn't see that one coming. What I just don't understand was, I mean, I can understand if they're like sitting at 3 wins, maybe even 4 wins, but man, they're in the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
They're still in the hunt, you know, and that team hasn't been in the playoffs for, you know, a long time now. So just go with what you got.
Right.
I didn't understand that one. Still don't understand that one. And I think that was just kind of a rookie coaching mistake.
And that's exactly what it was, and they paid a price, and now they could lose that wild card to Baltimore or maybe the Los Angeles Chargers. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Jet, thank you for the phone call.
Take care, John.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Twin Lakes. Hey, Rick.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
I just want to chime in on the Seahawks game. I wasn't able to attend. I had to watch it from home. I wasn't feeling well. But I was never prouder of the team, how they fought. Those Atlanta guys were on an upswing. They were playing better, and we were outgunned, outmanned. We had a lot of guys down, but we still took it down to a last-minute kick. I didn't see the play where Shaq Griffin got hurt, but I have noticed that in the past that he has a tendency to dip his head when tackling.
Mm-hmm.
He dives at guys' feet. And that's not only an easy way to get a concussion, it's also an easy way to get a serious neck injury. So they need to coach him up on his tackling technique. I don't know if that was the cause of it, but that's one of the things that I noticed. The other thing,
but I'll tell you one thing on that, though. The one thing that's very positive is his ability to tackle as a rookie.
He tries hard and does well. Yeah, he does well, but it's effective. But in the long term, I played football. And one thing, anybody who knows who played football, you don't dip your head when you tackle. You always keep your head up so you can see what's coming and what's going on. That's a quick, easy way to get your neck chopped or your spinal cords severed. But having said that, I want to expound on my our right tackle, Mr. Effetti.
Yeah.
It seems that spare tire that he's carrying around his middle is getting a lot bigger. He still has trouble maintaining the outside edge, and guys are going around him. And, he has a tendency to jump outside when he tries to slice across and make a block in front of his guard. He needs to do some pushaways. I mean, like push the plate away and get in a little bit better shape. I think he'll do better. Now, the field goal kicker. Now, he already cost us one game when he missed three field goals against the Redskins. And he also cost us a chance to go into overtime recently.
Mm-hmm.
It was a chance for him to redeem himself. Now, we took somebody else's kicker who they didn't want, who actually won a playoff game because he missed a pressure kick. And for some reason, they thought it was a good idea. I'm not even going to call the guy's name. But if they can somehow get a better kicker, that would help. This game here, it's a game that's going to be tough. It was a tight game at home with the 49ers, and they're going to be waiting for us, and nothing they would like better than to mess us up, because they figure they owe us one since we ate turkey on their 50-yard line a couple years ago.
Right.
So, like I said, I'm very proud of the Seahawks, the way they play. They were hurt, and tough game coming up.
Hey, by the way, to the kicker, here's the kickers that are available. Connor Barth, Younghoe Liu, the kicker who had been cut by the Chargers, Jason Myers, Michael Kosher, Andre Frank, Dan Carpenter, and Roberto Aguayo. Not a great list of kickers that are available right now.
Okay, but the thing is, he was trying to steer the ball. He routinely puts the ball in the end zone on the kickoffs, mm-hmm. So he's got the leg. But he was right down the middle, but he just left it short. Because he didn't want to power into the ball. He was afraid he'd hook it or slice it. So he was more concerned about the accuracy than getting the distance. So he needs to learn how to kick a ball hard. And then that way he won't have to worry about that. But anyway, like I said, I love my Hawks. It's a down year, tough year, but I'm still going to support them.
There you go. Hey, Rick, thank you for the phone call.
Yep.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey,
hello,
how are you?
Mr. Clayton, happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
So you hit the road today, right?
Yep, tonight.
Okay. Well, keep an eye out for that Notre Dame-Stanford game.
Okay.
I know when you get down there in the Bay Area, you could probably watch it on the old television set.
Depending on what time I get down there, right?
Going to be a barn burner. It's a tough game for the Irish. It's tough for them to win down there in Stanford. But that said, they're winning tonight, Mr. Clayton.
Well, you said that last... Didn't you say that about a week ago?
...full matchup against Penn State.
Uh-huh.
Regrettably, as you know, national championships are what the Irish play for. But this year...
Wait, they're out of the race right now, and it's like... When was the last time they played for a national championship?
Oh, it just seems like yesterday, Mr. Clayton, but it's been a while.
Yeah, it has been.
But don't worry, they are going to be there very soon. They've got the talent, they've got the coaches now, and all I can honestly say is how remarkable this season has been for this wonderful, wonderful group of kids at Notre Dame. To go from last year, 4-8, Mr. Clayton,
mm-hmm.
to 10-2, because they're going to beat Stanford tonight.
Oh, okay. Well.
Is incredible. So they'll be 11-2 when they win the bowl game. I'd say that's quite the turnaround, Mr. Clayton.
Well, I don't
know of any programs that have done it that fast in my looking back. That played major, that played the toughest schedule in the country this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been beaten twice now by top five ranked teams. Georgia at the beginning of the season, who was ranked number one. And then there was Miami. Boy, what a game that was yesterday, Mr. Clark.
That was? You're talking about Miami losing? Wow, that was stunning.
You know, that's what happens. They spend it all on the field against Notre Dame and didn't think they had to play anybody yesterday.
Yeah, well, maybe they thought that, they probably thought they were as good as and easy as Notre Dame was.
Oh, no, Mr. Clayton. I think, truly, they forgot to take their gold chains off, Mr. Clayton. They looked really slow yesterday against Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
well, the quarterback was terrible.
They stuck it to those guys.
They did.
So, Mr. Clayton, I hope you have a fabulous trip. Enjoy the beautiful Bay Area. And don't forget, Stanford and Notre Dame is going to be happening tonight. You can certainly check on it. I don't know if you're going to see the Huskies in Washington State when you're down there, but I know you're going to see in Kansas Stanford, Notre Dame, and it's going to be a good old-fashioned slugfest.
Okay, we'll see.
Okay,
hey, Irish, thank you. Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Ohio State's come back with two touchdown drives, and now they've tied to score against Michigan 14-14 at the half. SMU leading Tulane 27-21. Oklahoma blowing out Kansas 34-10. Memphis ranked 20th over East Carolina 49-0. Purdue over Indiana 21-10. Winner of that game gets at least bowl eligible. Florida State leading Florida in two teams that aren't, well, I guess they still have time to be bowl eligible. 24-13, Florida State leading. Cincinnati 7, Connecticut 6. Georgia leads Georgia Tech 17-7. It's Louisville 31, Kentucky 10. Boston College 28, Syracuse 14. Duke is losing to Wake Forest 17-3. UAB over Tulsa, Texas El Paso 14-7. North Texas and Rice tied at 7. Those are your college football scoreboards. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Professor. Happy Apple Cup weekend.
Happy Apple
Cup
week to you. And I hope
you have travels down to Seattle, and they can cap off a nice weekend with the Huskies winning tonight, and maybe we can get our Seahawks to win tomorrow. That would be eight.
Yeah, nice. Well, yeah, we'll see which one between Washington and Washington State can win.
It's going to be a good game. Go-to guy, I'm sure, is on pins and needles. As
oh,
always.
No doubt. And, absolutely.
Speaking of the go-to guy, I'm going to play the role of him briefly, if that's okay with
sure,
you.
Sure, that's fine.
And I'm in one of these survivor pool deals where you only have to pick a team to win, and I've been in it since week one, and as you go along, it gets less, you know, you have less and less teams to pick because you can only pick the same team once. So now I'm getting into this area where I'm having to go to the B-level teams and even the C-level teams, And I know you're a big Pittsburgh guy. I still have them in my back pocket, and they would be probably a great pick this weekend, but it'd be nice to save them further down the road. But Cincinnati and Baltimore, I'm kind of like looking at both of those, and they both have bad offenses,
right,
but pretty good defenses. So I don't know. You
that could be. I mean, you know, that's going to be a real low scoring game, and I just think that the way that Baltimore is playing right now, because I think they can sense that maybe they can sneak in and get a wild card. I think they just have the edge because, you know, they're reasonably healthy on defense. You know, the offense, you know, when you think about the Bengals offense, I mean, since last year, they're down a couple receivers because Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones left and they didn't have them. And then, of course, they didn't bring back their top two offensive linemen and they've been hurt by that. So that's where I think that the advantage is Baltimore.
Yeah, and I know your thoughts on Cleveland.
They're done. It's like, they're terrible. They're not go-to, that's for sure.
It's kind of one of those things, and I'll finish up, is that it's kind of one of the most dangerous teams can be the team that hasn't won yet. But I'm sure in your eyes, there probably is.
Jacksonville almost found that out, but again, it's still the Browns, and even Jacksonville was able to pull it and have the advantage in the end of the second half to be able to get the win. I mean, Cleveland can battle you for three quarters, but they're not a fourth quarter team.
Yep, that's what I've seen most of the year. Okay, well, I appreciate your opinion, and safe travels, and have a great game on Sunday.
Hey, Rick, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here as we get ready for an NFL Week 12 and also a big college football day. That Ohio State-Michigan game is a huge one, as we can see, tied up right now with the score at 14-14. We'll keep you up to date on that. And, of course, we'll come back and give you a chance to get you some preview of the Cougar game. We'll go with Jessamyn McIntyre to look ahead. It's going to be the Cougars coming up later on today. 3 o'clock will be the pregame. 5 o'clock will be the game. The Apple Cup here in Seattle doesn't get any better than that. Jessamyn McIntyre, who does the sidelines, is coming up next.